Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, I'm Max Borges with the Max Borges Agency.
Max, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Always exciting to talk to fellow South Florida thought leader like yourself. Before we jump in and talk about your current agency, what you have built, give me a thumbnail version of your career.
Oh, wow. Well, John, thank you for having me on your podcast. It's really a pleasure to be here with you today. So, I won't get into every little detail because it'll probably take the whole hour. But, you know, I started my public relations agency almost 20 years ago. I was looking for a job and I couldn't get hired, but I ended up getting offered a freelance gig working for a company. And after a few months, I realized it wasn't taking all day and I could probably get another freelance gig and start making some real money. And so I did that. And then got myself a little office and hired some part-time help and then got another client and just kept adding and, you know, doing as much as I could to grow the business and turn it into something. And it's funny because I tried starting lots of businesses that never really took off with real intent, right? And a real marketing plan and a business plan. And this one, I didn't have any plan. I wasn't even trying to start a business. I was just looking for a job to, you know, pay my rent. And so, you know, I built it from there. And after about 4 years of being in what I call the AFM stage, the anything for money stage, where I basically take any kind of marketing freelance work that anybody would give me, I realized that I needed to make a change. I needed to focus on something that I could be the best at. And so we decided to focus on consumer tech and doing media relations, and that worked, and the business really took off from there and just kept growing and growing year after year after year, you know, to the point where it got to, you know, over $10 million a year in revenue. And today we have 46 or 47 full-time employees, and the business essentially, you know, runs itself. So I've got it pretty easy these days. I've got a great management team that, you know, they say surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. And I've definitely done that. It can be a little intimidating sometimes, but I've got a real smart crew.
Wow, what a story. And definitely appreciate you sharing that. So, you know, hustle, grit, determination seems like some of the characteristics that really popped in my head as you were talking about your story.
Oh, that's all it was in the beginning, especially.
Yeah, exactly. From the very beginning, humble beginnings. And, you know, the AFM acronym, I thought that was pretty interesting and very cool. You know, it resonates on so many levels. Like, just like yourself, you know, as a serial entrepreneur, I successfully failed a lot of, you know, the startups and companies that I had founded. But it's funny how always the one that you're not so much as, you know, striving to build as an actual business that you have passion for, a lot of times that turns into an actual, you know, something, you know, that's sustainable, that's growing and, you know, has a legacy to that. So congrats on all of that success.
All right. Thank you.
So bring us to kind of some of the early stages when you were starting out your agency. Obviously, you've mentioned the AFM, anything for money, and you were, you know, you've been very creative in terms of finding the new clients or anything from that standpoint. I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of startup founders on a daily basis. And that initial traction to get the flywheel going is always, you know, one of the biggest challenges. Tell us a little bit about, if you were to give, you know, the 21 or 25-year-old Max the kind of the advice based on everything that you know now, what would that be? What are some of the pitfalls to avoid? What direction would you give yourself?
Yeah, great question. And I'm glad that you brought up the term flywheel. Obviously, you read Jim Collins. You know, in the beginning, I think one of the key things that really helped me is identifying and acknowledging what my weakness was. And, you know, my strength is getting things started, you know, the idea and then just kind of putting things into action quickly without a lot of planning and without a lot of thinking. You know, I tend to just kind of plow forward into things very, very quickly, and I can execute well. My weakness is that when I get about 80% of the way done, I get bored very, very quickly. And then I have a hard time finishing things. It's just very painful to finish things. And so I was very lucky in that my first employee, his name is Corrado Amenta, who, by the way, still works for me. He's been with me now almost 19 years. Corrado is really, really good at finishing things. And so I immediately realized that if I could surround myself with people who are good at detail work and good at finishing things, that, you know, anything that I get started is going to get done, and we're going to be able to grow that way. And so that was a big part of my focus in the beginning, is just surrounding myself with people who were good at the things that I was not good at. And, you know, I think a lot of times people will look at, and I did it myself for many years, I just said to my, because I'd gotten fired from jobs before because the boss would say, you know, you're good at getting things started, but you never follow through on anything. And they were right. And so I always said to myself, oh, I got to work on getting better at follow through. I got to work on getting better at follow through. But what I realized is that, no, I didn't need to work on getting better at follow through. I was never going to be good at follow through. My brain doesn't work that way. I needed to surround myself with people who were good at follow through, so I could get more things started and get them finished through my organization, as opposed to just myself. And so I think it's really important. And my advice to my, you know, 20-year-old self would be, figure out what things you can really improve upon and get better at, and figure out what things you're never going to be great at. And then, you know, work around the things that you're never going to be great at, because I think a lot of people end up tripping up against their weaknesses for their entire lives and never reach the success they want to reach because of some one area that they just were never great at and are never going to be great at.
Yeah, I love that recommendation. Great advice. You know, at the end of the day, it also boils down to, you know, that EQ, that self-awareness aspect of really understanding and taking that hard look in the mirror and, you know, what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? And basically everything you've talked about in terms of capitalizing on that and the weaknesses that you do recognize, try to either surround yourself with the people that can deliver, can improve in those areas, or work on those areas yourself that you can improve on. So that's, you know, very solid advice. Definitely appreciate that. You've mentioned the consumer tech, that your company specializes on that. And I'm excited to hear from, you know, we hear a lot, just going after the masses, go after the biggest market that you can. And, you know, on the other spectrum, as they say, the riches are in the niches. So
right.
you know, if you dominate a niche, if you become really good, you know, some type of a specialist versus a generalist, I think there's definitely a lot of advantages to that. Talk to us a little bit from that perspective. How did you select that particular segment? What was the kind of the direction from that? And what are you seeing in the market from that standpoint these days?
Sure. So when I was in the AFM stage, the anything for money stage, we were working with a lot of different types of companies doing all kinds of marketing work, because I just thought, I have a marketing agency, we do marketing, right? Which is really kind of encapsulates everything. And I was running around like a chicken with his head cut off. I think I had maybe 10 employees and I was just going crazy. And I was happy because the company was doing $1 million a year in business. And certainly that was, you know, a lot more than I dreamed of when I got that first freelance gig. But I wanted to grow and I couldn't figure out how I was going to grow because I was already so busy that I just didn't feel like I had any headroom. And I happened to be reading three books, or had just read three different books that had a similar message. One was Jim Collins' Good to Great. The other one was Jack Welch's book, Straight from the Gut. And the other one was Rockefeller Habits by Vern Harnish. And all three books had the same message in them, and that's figure out what you can be the best at. You know, when Jack Welch took over GE, quite famously, you know, he cut out all of the businesses in GE that weren't number one in their market, or they were number two and could be number one in the next 5 years. He cut out everything else. And by doing that, by focusing on their strengths, GE was able to have this incredible growth. And Jack Welch is one of the greatest, you know, managers and CEOs of all time, you know, based on that fundamental principle. So I asked myself, well, how can I apply that to my business? How, you know, these are big companies, how can I apply it to my business? So I went home one night and I had a yellow pad, actually just like this yellow pad here, and sat at the kitchen table and I made two lists. I made a list of all the clients that were happy and that weren't requiring my time because my team was handling the work from top to bottom. And then a list of all the clients that I was getting sucked into that were requiring my time, that the team was coming to me with problems or whatever it was. And what I found was the first list, which was thankfully the longer list, it was about 70% of our clients, were all consumer tech clients. And the other 30% were a bunch of different things, just kind of a mishmash. And I realized if I just focused on the first 70%, I'd have almost nothing to do. And what that meant was, because I wasn't looking to have nothing to do, I was looking to free myself up to do more business development, focus more on hiring, focus more on applying systems and processes to our what we were going to do. And I also realized that if we just focused on that first list of consumer, because they were all consumer tech clients, that we could over time become the best in the world at PR for consumer tech companies. And so I went into the office the next day and I announced to everybody, from now on, we're not signing any clients that are not consumer tech. And in fact, we were working on some pitches with some companies that were outside of that sweet spot, and we had to call them up. And it was painful because I knew we were going to win the business and had to tell them, hey, we no longer want to, you know, pitch for your business. We're not interested in working with you. We've made a change in the way our business is going to run. And I remember one of the companies, you know, being a little bit pissed off about it. But it was the best decision I ever made, because we suddenly, my job as a leader got way easier. We started growing more quickly. Everybody in the company knew what we were all about. Right. So they were able to, if you asked anybody in the company what we did and what we were great at, like, they could explain it. They couldn't explain it before I made that decision. And so, excuse me, that made a huge difference in our ability to scale the business. And I think, you know, this is a big issue for professional service firms of all kinds, whether it's PR agencies or marketing agencies or accounting firms or law firms or whatever they are. They tend to do anything for everybody. They're in the AFM stage and never get out of it. And so that makes it hard, because then a company that focuses on one area can really come in and clobber them, because they can get a lot better at that one thing. Because when you're doing the same thing over and over and over again, you can put systems and processes into place. You can become more efficient. You can come up with competitive business advantages and do things that other agencies don't do because they're not as focused as you are. So yeah, there's a lot you can do. And there's a lot that we do, you know, today that other firms simply cannot do because they don't work with 50 consumer tech companies like we do. And that facilitates our ability to do things that just wouldn't be possible if we didn't focus.
Lots of great takeaways from what you had just covered, in the sense that understand, define your DNA, you know, what's your ethos, what's the kind of the thesis that you really define for your organization, even if that means losing some deals, so losing some business in the sense of revenue or the money. Longer term, have that vision in the sense that this is the direction that I want to take the company. This is, I want this, you know, at the core. I think, you know, it's very insightful, but at the same time, I would imagine it's very difficult to master, because at the time probably was, you know, one of the most difficult decisions, that you have this great opportunity in front of you, but it doesn't necessarily fit the overall, you know, the core strategy of the company. So you always had that vision going forward in a long-term run.
Right. And it was a tough decision, but what made it easier is, you know, having recently read those three books that had the same messages and had so many examples of successful companies that had taken this, it gave me the confidence to be very disciplined in that focus and, you know, feel good about turning down companies that were coming to us that weren't in our sweet spot. When, you know, employees would say to us, oh, we could do this, we should take it. I say, nope, not in our sweet spot. Not, it's not going to help us become the best in the world at what we want to, what we are focusing on. So, you know, we're moving on. And, you know, Jim Collins calls this the hedgehog concept. It's what do you love? What can you be the best at? And what is there a market for? And mm-hmm. when you can figure out those three, and a lot of people figure out two of the three and think that they can, you know, have a successful business, but you really can't. You have to have all three. It's got to be, you've got to love doing it. You've got to be able to become the best at it. And there's got to be a market for it. People want to have to want to buy whatever it is you're selling, or it doesn't matter how good it is.
Great. I love that. I love the kind of the compartmentalization from Jim Collins's book, in the sense that really understand and ask yourself those questions that are very tough at this, in the end of the day. And does that fit within the strategy of the company? So that's powerful. You, at the earlier segment of what we were talking about, when you were first starting out, you've mentioned something around surrounding yourself with the best people, someone, you know, someone who is way smarter than you, or, you know, fulfills the gap that's missing on the team. For me, that's a fascinating area because, you know, talent acquisition is it's challenging, especially in this current market. And when it comes to interviewing, it adds another layer of complexity because a lot of folks think they're really good at interview, but at the same time, it's, you know, it's very difficult to master. Unless you interview for a profession every day, every single day, and you develop that muscle, then you're probably in a much better position. But just like any other executive, it's a challenge. And a lot of the interviewing that I'm seeing, and myself included, at least it was all based on that past experience, which I think is very flawed in the sense that you're not really focusing on what's the strength that's missing on my team. Talk to us a little bit about from that interviewing aspect perspective, when you meet your prospective candidates that are looking to join your team, or you know, maybe headhunting somebody, what does the interview with you look like? What are some of the questions that you ask? And more importantly, what do you look for in their responses when you talk to candidates?
Yeah, good question. You know, I don't do a lot of interviewing these days. I only have three people that report to me, and they've been reporting to me for a long time. So I haven't actually hired anybody in years now. But I'll tell you that when I first started and I was hiring people, the one thing that I always looked at in a person was, you know, I tried to figure out how hungry they were, how much potential they had. You know, I didn't really worry too much about what they had accomplished up until that date. I worried more about what I thought they could accomplish in the future, because the one thing that I believe is that people have far greater potential for success than they ever realized. Far, far greater. Like, I don't think people are, you know, the average person doesn't tap into 10% of their full potential. And so if I can find somebody who's hungry and who's willing to tap into that potential, and I can help them tap into that potential, then I can help them be their greatest version of their self. And that's really the most rewarding thing for me in this business, is seeing people who've worked with me for X number of years be able to look back and say, this is the best work I've ever done in my life. And so, you know, as the years have gone by, there's been more and more people who have said that. And those same people, then if you keep developing them, if you keep pushing them, if you keep trusting them, if you keep giving them challenges, but letting them know that you trust them to accomplish it and that you believe in them, they grow and grow and grow and grow. And today I've got probably a dozen people or more that have been with the company for more than 10 years. You know, like I said, my first employee has been with me almost 19 years. My senior vice president, Matt Shoemate, has been with me for more than 15 years. And I've got another, a number of other people that have been with me for between 10 and 15 years. And these people are not just long-term employees, they're long-term growers. They're people who have been growing and developing and moving up you know, every single year, to a point where, you know, the business and the organization just kept getting smarter and smarter. Like, I remember when I used to be the smartest guy in the room. And that was, you know, in the very, very beginning. But today, that's not the case anymore. Today, I sit in meetings and I see what the team is creating, and it blows my mind. And sometimes I don't even fully understand it. So I go, and I think this is great. Like, the business, the company has actually become smarter than me now. And that to me is a great feeling, because that's always what I wanted to do. Is I wanted to create an organization that could run itself, and one that was smarter than me. And I think that, you know, by believing people and giving them the running room, giving them the incentive financially, giving them the hope for the future, giving them opportunities to grow and develop in their careers so that they could feel like they're moving somewhere. You know, all those things amounted to people accomplishing, you know, the greatest work they've ever done.
I love that leadership mantra almost, that, you know, unfortunately we don't see that a lot these days, in the sense that as a CEO, the founder of the company, you strive to develop, you know, an organization or build a system in place that can run efficiently without you there. Because in my book, that means success. But unfortunately, I see a lot of CEOs or a lot of leaders that are so hands-on and want to be involved in every little aspect, every little thing of, you know, that goes on in operations, that really almost handicaps the organization in that sense. And it's just, you know, I love what you're talking about from that leadership perspective, that we could probably talk about it for the rest of the episode. But I want to move on a little bit to something that you've been referencing all along, some of the quotes from the books that you have read, some of the, you know, key takeaways from the readings that you had done, which, by the way, you beat me to the punch, is usually my the last question in every episode. Regarding the book that you had written, which I understand is the compilation of some amazing quotes. That's right. How to be a fan fucking fantastic. And for the audio listeners, you know, we'll reference the link to the book where you guys can find it. Tell us a little bit more about that. What are some of the, you know, what was the motivation behind putting that together? And last but not least, what's the kind of your favorite three quotes out of that?
Sure. So, you know, the motivation behind it was really kind of led from the fact that I'd had so many mentors and so many books that I've read and so many things that I've learned over the years that I applied to my business that I felt made it exceptionally successful. And I wanted to share that. And, you know, one night I was just sitting on the sofa watching something boring on TV and just started typing some quotes into my phone. And I thought, oh, this is kind of interesting. And I put them into a Word document. It might have been like 20 quotes, and kind of like in a book form. And I shared it with a couple of friends. And I got some really positive feedback. So I thought, okay, I should build this out. So I spent the next year, just as I was going through my day and dealing with various different challenges or you know, work, you know, things around the job. And a quote would come up and I would write it down and I would just kind of keep track until I had about 120 of them. And I felt like these quotes really cover the majority of philosophies that I hold and use in running my business and my life successfully. And I thought, you know, I should put this into a book. So that's what I did. And yeah, there's a few in here that stand out for me. You know, one of them is over promise and over fucking deliver. And, you know, a lot of people say under promise and over deliver. But I say over promise and then over fucking deliver, because that's kind of what we did in the beginning. You know, when we first started the firm, we didn't have a lot of experience. And, you know, when we talked with a client and said we were going to do something, we weren't 100% sure that we could do it, but we were going to work our butts off to deliver on whatever promise we made. And so, you know, a lot of people will use that term, fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like, fake it, but then work really, really hard so it's not fake. And that's exactly what we did. And sometimes that meant working late at night and working on weekends to deliver, but we knew we had to deliver on those promises, because if we didn't, we weren't going to keep that business. We weren't going to be able to leverage that into getting more business. So it's really about not having the fear of making a big promise. You know, you've got to be fearless in making those big promises, and knowing and not being afraid of the work, and knowing that, you know, through hard work, you can deliver on big promises.
Well, that's great. Great recommendations and some amazing quotes. Absolutely. Definitely going to make a note of that for myself. So that's very interesting. So from a standpoint of those entrepreneurs or those are looking to start their own marketing agencies or PR firms, share some of the, you know, lessons learned throughout your journey in terms of you giving that recommendation for those entrepreneurs looking to build their own, you know, companies that are similar to yours or in that space. Yeah. What are some of the things to look out for? What would be your best advice?
Yeah, well, the first thing you got to figure out is, because most people who start a professional services firm, whether it's a PR firm or an advertising firm or, you know, an accounting firm or a law firm, they do it because they're good at doing the thing that the firm is going to do, right? They're good at PR, they're good at law, they're whatever. But what you've got to decide is, do you want to be a practitioner? Do you want to be the freelancer? Or do you want to be a business owner? And that's two very different things. A lot of people will get into the business because they like providing the service. But you have to, if you're going to grow a business and scale it to dozens of employees and millions of dollars in revenue, you have to look at it as, you know, you're building an organization, and you have to find ways to step away from doing the day-to-day client work and hiring, training, inspiring, leading people to do great work for your organization, so that ultimately what you're getting is 1 + 1 = 3, right? Where you have a number of people where the sum is greater than the total is greater than the sum of its parts. And that happens by hiring the right people, putting them together, and giving them the right tools and the right inspiration to do great work. So I think that would be the first thing, is, you know, decide that you want to grow a larger business. And then the second thing is, you're probably going to have to spend some time in the AFM stage while you're looking for what your area of focus is going to be, because you won't really know for sure until you get out there and you start doing it. Fortunately, if you do things right, you can make money in the AFM stage. It's not like you don't have to borrow money. You can build a professional services firm with no money. I've never borrowed a penny ever in 20 years, and never had credit card debt. Always paid the credit card. Everything I did was from cash flow, because with a professional services firm, as long as you're not, you know, I mean, there's really nothing you need to buy when you started. I had a laptop on my kitchen table, so I didn't spend a dime to start the business. And then when I finally got my first little office, you know, it was small enough and it was shitty enough and cheap enough that I was able to pay for it with the money that I was making. And so, so I think that, it's important to be in that AFM stage, to not get yourself in debt, and to use that opportunity to find what the niche is going to be, where the riches are. As you said, the riches are in the niches. And I think that that's ultimately what you're looking for. And once you find that, it's like striking gold, because the business gets easier. Profits even get better. It scales more quickly. It becomes more fun. Just everything gets better.
That's great advice. At the end of the day, keep drilling for that oil. You'll hit the oil eventually. Don't disassemble the rig, because at the end of the day, you know, if this is the direction you decide to go, keep pushing forward. So very powerful advice. Max, last but not least, what's the kindest thing that anyone has ever done for you?
Oh my God. That is a hard question to answer, because there's so many things. You know, I think one of the kindest things anyone's done for me is it was a person named Tony Van Veen, who's still a dear friend of mine, and he was my first freelance gig, and stayed on as my client for more than 5 years, and he believed in me, and he believed in me when I went from being just freelancing for him to letting him know that I was going to take on other clients and work other people and not just work for him exclusively. And he believed in me and he supported me and worked with me for a very long time. And he's one of my dearest friends. And yeah, so I would say that's probably the kindest thing anyone ever did for me.
That's awesome. Max, I can't thank you enough for your time today. Very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit and feel very inspired that this, you know, after this conversation. So I really appreciated you being very generous with your advice today. And what I love doing with a lot of guests is do a follow-up recording in about a year. So we revisit the conversation from a year ago, see that everything we had talked about still makes sense, still applies. And I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
That would be great. Thanks, John. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.